Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And this is Jerry.
Special guest Jerry has returned.
I'm back.
With another suggestion for the podcast.
Join the exclusive Two Timers Club.
Indeed. Wow, really? I feel very special.
Bombshell, 2019. Directed by Jay Roach, who we know from all the Austin Powers movies, Meet the Parents and Meet the Falkers, Trumbo, and the Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis, The Campaign.
Trumbo, huh?
Yeah. Now, I don't think that pedigree would necessarily lead to this movie, but he did an amazing job, I thought.
Oh, this movie kind of writes itself.
I thought it was pretty clever. So, Jerry, tell us why we watched this movie this week.
I was thinking about movies, especially that you guys don't do a lot of comedies, which is really my wheelhouse. But I really wanted to see Bombshell in the theater. And it was the holidays and I had some time on my hands. So I went to see it and I thought it was so good that I went to see it for a second time in the theater. So I think I've only seen two movies or three movies ever. One was Aladdin with Robin Williams. I saw that three times in the theater because it was so funny and there were so many jokes, right? And so you just have to keep watching it to get all the jokes. But with Bombshell, there were so many intricacies that I really wanted to see it a second time. And I wanted to take my mom because I knew she would really like it. And she did. And, when it ended, she's like, wow, Bombshell. And then I bought it on iTunes. And so I think I watched it last night. I think it was the fourth time I've watched it.
So you think watching it repeatedly, you gain more from on rewatch?
One of the things for me in rewatching movies is there's really great scenes that I like and nuance that I like to watch again. Like the scene with Kate McKinnon in the beginning. I love that scene. And I just enjoy it and I get more out of it each time I watch it, especially when there's a lot of intricacy and storyline and then just great acting. So that's why I do think it gets better. But there's so many details that if you just continue to watch it, you're like, oh, I'm picking up on this. Oh, I'm picking up on these little things.
It's a definitively dense story
with a thousand inside jokes. Like, I understand people from other countries don't get this movie.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, they get the sexual politics of it, but they don't understand all those knowing glances between the ladies in the elevator and that kind of thing. And the glances people just give to each other when somebody says something particularly foxish, just like on the in the news floor or whatever.
Yeah, I think what I really like about this movie is it has a lot of layers. So first, it really is a peek inside the Fox establishment, which I would say I purposefully lean away from. Right. So I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that. That is definitely not something that I ever watch. So I was kind of able to think about it in a different way. So I thought there was an educational nature to it, but also interesting to see that. The relationship between Fox and Trump, and then, of course, the Me Too sexual politics of it. I think that there's a lot of things that you're unpacking. And at the end of the day, the movie is something that reunites women, regardless of what their political affiliation is. And so I think that's where even though it's about someone who believes so fundamentally different and talks about white Santa Claus, we have shared experiences that I understand.
So yeah, so it's a movie that actually humanizes Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
Also something you would not think that would happen. But in a great way. I don't know. I really
like Gretchen Carlson.
Yeah. It actually, yeah. It's I was surprised actually how, I guess gently is the wrong word, but how basically friendly this was to most of the real life characters. Like, obviously, Roger Ailes is the bad guy, but it didn't even paint him as the devil as much as a creepy guy completely out of touch with what you should really do in the office. Unless I am looking at this completely wrong, which I could be.
Wait, hold on. I thought this movie was a unfair and brutal character assassination of Roger Ailes.
For real?
No.
Of course. Yeah, thank you.
I was like, I gotta go.
That would have been great. Yeah. Well, as the most right leaning person on the podcast by far, that was well played.
Thank you. Yeah. No. I agree with you about Megyn Kelly. I was surprised at how likable her character was in this movie.
Right, but then, you know, it's right in the beginning, somebody asked her, are you feminist? She's like, I'm not a feminist. Right, and then there's another reference to that later in the movie. And while, yes, it makes, I think the movie humanizes her, there's still those little barbs, and I was like, what kind of woman's not a feminist? Right, so.
A Fox News anchor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought the casting in this movie was amazing, especially just because they got the look down.
Yeah, well, Charlize Theron should win every Oscar forever, male and female.
I could not figure out what she did to her face because she looked like Charlize Theron and she looked exactly like Megyn Kelly. It was weird.
Crazy?
It was
creepy. So crazy.
Separated at birth.
Because Nicole Kidman did a fine job as Gretchen Carlson, but to me, she was always Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. I kept seeing Megyn Kelly.
Yeah.
So she had it down.
When I watched the movie the first time, I said to whoever I was with, I said, you know, if you would have shown me a picture of Megyn Kelly, I would not know who that was. But watching this movie, I realized that I knew who she was.
Yeah. Well,
like, I don't think I could have identified her. I couldn't have picked her out of a lineup. But I've seen enough clips of her mannerisms that I was like, oh, that's who that is. Right. That's how good it was. Like, it helped me identify the actual person that she was portraying.
Again, we're going to talk a lot about the movie without talking about the plot at all.
Well, we'll get there.
Well, no, the plot is for your after recording.
Yeah, apparently. Yes. Yeah. See, to me, Megyn Kelly was always, I mean, she always portrayed herself as like fairly hard nosed, but she put herself in these ridiculous positions where she talked about how Santa was white. The same situation where Don Lemon, who I also hate from CNN, although hate is a strong word, he actually said at one point he wondered aloud, seriously, whether, you know, that we should seriously consider that the Malaysian airliner fell into a small black hole. It's like, No, we can't. We shouldn't think about that. Yeah, that will never
happen. Have we proven that it didn't?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. No, that was his whole point. Like, yeah. But the fact that Megyn Kelly is she's our Luke Skywalker in this adventure is amazing.
She's not nearly as whiny.
But yeah, she's sure. Not okay. She's not really Luke. She's more R2-D2, I guess.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, I mean, she's the character.
You think she's whiny? You think the character's whiny?
No. Luke Skywalker is whiny.
Oh.
Actually, tangent number one. I'm listening to a podcast. No, it's great. It's a podcast with Nicole Byer and Lauren Lapkus, and it's called Newcomers. And neither of them, Nicole Byer or Lauren Lapkus, had seen any of the Star Wars movies. and didn't get it, didn't understand why it was a thing, thought it was sort of stupid, but they committed to watching all of the Star Wars movies. In addition to, I think they want to make it like a 30 episode podcast. But the very first movie, A New Hope, they were dying. They were all those things about the first episode, the fact that the pacing is horrible, and they weren't sure why they were watching the shiny man and the toaster in the desert for 25 minutes before anything happened. And then they talked about moisture farming and all this stuff. But what's interesting is by Return of the Jedi, oh, they want to buy merch. They're fans. They are into it. They are looking forward to the prequels. I haven't gotten to those episodes yet. I'm going to guess they're going to be disappointed.
So they watch them in supposed chronological order, not in actual order of creation.
No, they're watching them in creation order.
Oh, so they watch Star Wars first.
Yeah. They're going okay. 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3,
okay.
7, 8, 9, whatever.
Ridiculous.
How many are there?
11, right?
Too many.
I've only seen 4, so.
I've only seen 6.
I've seen 3.5.
Yeah. Oh. Okay, so I don't feel bad.
No. But it's interesting, like listening to their journey, it was very funny, because all of the people that grew up with Star Wars, who are, you know, my age group, of course, you know, we want to defend the first movie because it was so, like, integral to our childhood. And then you realize that the movie has all the 1977 problems of movies that don't really hold up now. And the best part about it was there are a million characters that you could buy toys of. Like, even the first 3 movies, Boba Fett is nothing. Boba Fett is on screen for like 5 minutes in all of the movies combined. And he's yet one of the favorite characters of the whole thing. Kind of because he had one of the best toys. But we are...
far afield.
Yes, we fell a little bit.
We have
bit.
Driven off yes. the tangent cliff. Yeah.
Anyway, so Newcomers, a podcast I recommend because it's fun to watch these people's journeys over the fact that, yeah, maybe the first Star Wars movie was not all that great, but they do get better. And there's lots to like.
It's a hard introduction for children, let me tell you.
It is, yeah. Yep.
Are you having some children friction?
I couldn't do it with Journey. There's no way. Yeah, I tried.
Maybe when she's a teenager.
Yeah, no. What is it? It's, you see the big, boring desert scenes, and then as soon as they set fire to what Uncle Ben and Aunt Beru or whatever. Yeah, and you see their charred corpses in the sand.
Yeah. So my children could barely get through Star Wars, but they loved The Force Awakens, which is essentially the same movie, but done a little bit flashier, better pacing with a female protagonist.
Sweet. And you skip all those first 6 movies.
Yes.
Yeah. That are still available to you if you want to go back.
Ah.
Okay. So back to another labyrinthine story of deceit and treachery.
Nice.
It's a great line.
Thank you. We have
so I actually ended up watching this movie with my wife last night.
Oh, what did she think? It's
not something we normally do together for the podcast, but she had a lot of thoughts about this movie.
Cool. Oh, excellent. Is she in the room?
I offered to give her a voice, and she laughed at me and said no.
Okay. All right. Well, it would be inappropriate for you to not give her a voice.
I was going to say, you can give me your cell number. I'll call her.
She is her own person, I've been told.
She did say I could paraphrase and share her thoughts as I wished. So
okay.
at the end, well, I will do that.
Okay. Excellent.
If we remember.
We'll remember.
I'm a bad, bad, mean boyfriend because I made boyfriend Jesse finish mowing the lawn. And so he couldn't watch the movie. He watched like the first 20 minutes of it. It's like, it's so good. I'm like, you have to go mow the damn lawn. Go.
So. this movie was surprisingly good. I thought it got like middling or bad reviews when it came out.
It did.
And I didn't seek it out to watch it. I probably would have gotten there eventually, but I'm really glad that Jerry, you recommended it for this week, because I was really shocked how good this movie was.
Yeah, me too. So have you guys seen, what is it, The Big Short? Okay. I have not. I understand that that has a storytelling story that's kind of unique, where characters talk to the camera a lot and there's a bunch of interesting exposition. Am I thinking of the right movie?
Yeah. I didn't like The Big Short as much as I like this movie. I thought it was fine.
A lot of people that didn't have super positive, everybody thought that the acting was great all around, but they thought that if they could have done a little more Big Short stuff, it would have been more clever. But yeah, going into this, since I didn't know anything about it, I thought it was twice as clever as it needed to be to tell the story, and it told the story really well. There's only one part that I would sort of criticize, but it really is nitpicking.
The box office budget reported at $32 million to create. The USA gross was $31 million, worldwide gross $60
million. So not a blockbuster, but made its money.
Yeah.
And The Big Short was $133 million, so maybe if they had done a little bit more Big Short stuff, it would have made more money.
Yeah, or it just would have, yeah, it would have not even made its money back, right? If The Big Short was a $100 million or more movie.
Have any of you watched The Crown?
I have not.
No.
So John Lithgow plays Winston Churchill in The Crown.
Oh. Really?
Oh, yeah. I've heard that's and really good.
Between that performance and this performance, he is having a couple of years.
Yeah.
I would put this performance, The Crown, and probably Ricochet on his Mount Rushmore of great movies.
Ricochet.
I don't even know if I've seen Ricochet.
You and I saw Ricochet in the theater.
Okay. I think one of John Lithgow's better performances is season 4 of Dexter, maybe?
That was good.
Yeah.
See, there. You just completed the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, there you go. And I haven't visited or revisited The World According to Garp, but I cannot imagine it holds up. Those John Irving stories are a little bit...
I tried to watch that a couple of years ago. Again, I saw it when I was young. My mom let me watch all kinds of movies I probably shouldn't have watched.
That's a theme of our show.
Same.
Was it Kramer versus Kramer? Was that a movie about divorce or something?
Yes,
from the 70s?
Hoffman. Yes.
Yeah, it was like late 70s or really early 80s. I think I was 7 or 8. She took me to see that. Like, what 7 or 8-year-old needs to see that movie?
Well, it's easier than talking to your child.
1979, by the way.
1979. Okay,
December.
Well, perfect. I had just turned 7 when I saw the movie.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
Oh wait, no. I think maybe six. Turned 6. Sorry. So.
World According to Garp was 82.
Yeah.
I tried to watch it again, and I don't remember the results. Maybe I'd had too much wine or something, but I couldn't get into it.
It had quite a bizarre cast.
Yeah.
It was a veritable who's who of the time, because it had, Robin Williams and Glenn Close, John Lithgow, Hugh Cronin, Susie Kurtz, and Jessica Tandy, maybe? And a whole bunch of other people. I just remember being a crazy...
A tremendous ensemble cast, much like Bombshell.
Exactly. Yes. Very nice.
Brother Drew, thank you.
So let's dive in a little bit to the plot of Bombshell. We have, again, this movie is about Fox News in 2016, roughly. The person who created Fox News, but was not the head of Fox News, is one Roger Ailes, played by John Lithgow, masterfully. He's the chairman, and he runs the network from the second floor of the building with an iron fist. However, the real money behind the operation, the owners of Fox News, is... I lost my mind.
Rupert Murdoch,
yes. Yes, the Rupert Murdoch Group. And... Were you excited to see who played Rupert Murdoch?
I knew who played him, so I was looking so forward to him coming on screen.
Oh, I as soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, yes. Yes, this is perfect.
Yeah. Again, a lot of the casting in this movie was spot on.
The biggest complaint my wife had was that one of the Murdoch sons had a very strong Australian accent and the other one didn't.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that. Yeah. What is that?
I assume that's a real thing.
I assume one of them was raised here and one of them was not.
Yeah, because Rupert Murdoch has had a few wives.
Why did the Murdoch brothers have different accents?
Hey, Siri, why did the Murdoch brothers have different accents?
Okay, I found this on the web for why does the Murdoch brothers have different accents. Check it out.
Oh. All right, another TV question. Have any of you watched Succession?
No.
I have not.
I watched maybe the first 6 or 7 episodes, but I started binging. And sometimes when I binge too much, it makes me a little like, ugh. And so then I didn't go back. And then I stopped paying attention. Then I have to go back and rewatch it. I thought it was very good when I was paying attention. But when I stopped paying attention, it wasn't as good.
It was really good. And the first season ends so spectacularly.
That's a good, great. Yeah, it's a good Murdoch family parallel, I'm sure.
Yes, they're such like a direct analog for the Murdoch clan. It's great.
Well, they're both have the same parents and they were both born in London.
Oh, maybe one developed an American accent intentionally.
Or maybe it's one of them's a bad actor.
Yeah, that's probably it.
In 1989, Rupert Murdoch brought Lachlan Murdoch, then 18 years old, to Australia while on business to have Lachlan trained for 3 months at the Daily Mirror.
That's his three-month accent? Is he Madonna?
At age 22, he was appointed general manager. And now it looks like he was there for quite some time. Let's see, director of news. Now it looks like he was there for quite some time. Maybe he just his osmosis.
There we go. Okay, so back to Fox News 2016.
He looks kind of like dead calm.
Billy Zane?
No, the other guy.
Sam Neill.
Yes, he looks like a dead calm version of Sam Neill. Lachlan does.
Poor guy. If you're going to be one of the people in Dead Calm, it's not going to be Sam Neill you want to be.
Back to the movie.
So, Roger Ailes, John Lithgow. Then we have Megyn Kelly, Charlize Theron.
I just had a great idea for a bit.
Oh, well,
two of them, actually.
Since you
two
love bits, please.
Yeah, I love bits. one of the bits, which just occurred to me after the first bit occurred to me, was the continue to interrupt Eric bit, because that's always hilarious. But the first bit, we should track down whoever wrote that IMDb synopsis of Dead Calm and just have them write and read a synopsis for our podcast so we don't have to talk about the plot at all.
Oh, that's genius.
No, I want to find male or female, doesn't matter. I want the breathiest performer to just read that synopsis.
Every episode?
No, just the episode of Dead Calm.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Dead Calm synopsis on IMDb is one of the worst things I've ever read.
It's amazing.
All right.
Yeah, it turned a rape scene into a consensual fun sex scene.
Not only that, the entire thing was could be categorized as erotica. Like from the opening of the,
it was like some fan fiction.
Yeah,
it was like some fan fiction revision of Dead Calm.
The only adjectives used were sexual adjectives.
So Charlize Theron
plays Megyn Kelly, who is one of the network's biggest stars. She's preparing to moderate a debate of the Republican candidates for president. Despite some pushback from colleagues, she's determined to ask Trump about his sexist comments toward women. The day of the debate, she gets extremely sick, vomiting in the bathroom. She goes on anyway and asks him about his comments. He spends the evening tweeting viciously about her, inciting his followers to attack her as well. Megan is distressed at the amount of hate she receives and about the fact that she has become the story instead of reporting it. Which already, like, all you need to do to make somebody who, again, maybe not the most sympathetic of characters, if they get beaten up by Donald Trump, they look so much more, I don't know, approachable. Like, it's sympathetic, at least.
The enemy of my enemy.
Well, I mean, again, I don't think she was ever my enemy necessarily, but man, she was in a no-win situation.
Any woman that, what that line where she said, did he just say I was anger menstruating?
Yes.
It's great. That makes her sympathetic to pretty much every woman ever.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, somebody saying that about you, it's like, oh, girl, I got you. No matter, I know you got some whacked out beliefs, but there, I feel your pain.
Yeah, and the fact they don't have to make anything up in this movie, they just have to basically play the actual.
It's reality.
Tape. Yeah, it's not even a character playing it. Ah! Yeah.
End times, my friends. End times.
Most of what happened, most of what they portrayed was all true.
Oh no, yeah, it's all. I mean, that's why they got away with telling the story.
It's shocking.
It's all discoverable, as it turns out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she actually is already planning to take a vacation. And during her time off, she gets rude comments made to her, and paparazzo appear outside her window, taking pictures of her daughter, forcing her husband Douglas, Mark Duplass, from Zero Dark Thirty, to get rid of him. Mark Duplass does a good job.
Yeah, he's great. He's also on The Morning Show.
Yes, he is.
Have you watched that?
Yeah, we were a couple episodes in. It's excellent.
Yeah, it's excellent. I think it's really good television.
Yeah.
So, when she returns to work, Fox hires a security detail, at her insistence, and but the network is not going to go out against Trump. Roger, who's close to Megan, is notoriously paranoid and believes that Megan was poisoned the day of the debate, which I love that she got sick the day of the debate. And Roger Ailes insinuates it was her driver
because he took a coffee from her, but he didn't. She didn't know him.
Yeah,
so she took a coffee from him, and she didn't know him, and she got sick.
And that was Trump coffee.
Somehow insisted they go to a new fancy place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Trump had caught wind that she was going to be asking him some tough questions.
Yes.
I think when she sat down at that table with that gigantic binder of women.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
I didn't know how to feel, but I just felt ooky.
No, but immediately you go right to her being hard-nosed to being sick. And therefore more sympathetic slightly. And then back to being hard-nosed and getting just beaten for it. Then we meet Gretchen Carlson, played by Nicole Kidman, who is the co-host of Fox and Friends, but was removed from that spot and given a less valuable afternoon one. After enduring sexist comment after sexist comment, often on the air, she was tired of it. She meets with her attorneys, who tell her that her contract makes it tough for her to fight back in any way. They tell her the story of Rudy Bakhtar, who was fired after not accepting her boss's sexual advances. And they tell her the workaround would be to sue Roger directly, but she'd need to have hard evidence and other women would need to come forward. And Gretchen is certain that other women will, and she returns to work. By the way, one of the attorneys is Stephen Root.
Yes.
Who's great in everything.
Yes, he is. He's been in many a movie on the pod.
Yes, he has.
By the way, during that scene, my wife actually said, no, they won't.
No, they won't what?
Come forward.
No. Yeah. So then the fictitious character, what do they call it when they combine several?
Amalgamation.
Yeah, there we go. Kayla Papasil, played by Margot Robbie, who is a young conservative woman raised in a religious home who worships the right wing and conservative Fox News Network. She has begun her career there, working under Gretchen, until she is offered a promotion to the Bill O'Reilly Show, the network's biggest program. On one of her shows, Gretchen wears no makeup to show and support women, and Roger storms down the studio and makes a vicious comment about her appearance, which Kayla hears. Then she tells Gretchen she's leaving, and Gretchen wants her to stay, and tells her she can protect her. But Kayla doesn't understand why she would turn down a promotion, and why she would need protecting. She moves to the O'Reilly Show and gets chewed out by him on the first day, but she's helped along by her coworker Jess Carr, played by Kate McKinnon, who kind of gives her the lay of the land about Fox News and gives as good an exposition as Charlize Theron did in the opening with Megyn Kelly. Kate McKinnon gives another fantastic exposition as the Jess character, guiding Kayla through the process.
Or just that whole scene where she's writing stuff down on the paper and notes, like, you know, like, oh, don't do that. which is hilarious.
No, but even just explaining how the Fox News works about terrify your grandmother, outrage your grandfather.
Think of it like an Irish street cop, right? And yeah, I think what that explanation gave me the best picture of why Fox is so effective.
That's because they know their audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was, it was those kinds of things that I'm like, oh, I get it. Like she described, they describe it perfectly.
Yeah. And at the risk of sounding fair and balanced, I am sure you could make some sort of documentary about both CNN and MSNBC and expose some of the same sort of tactics. But Fox is better at it. I mean, they always have been. That's why they're successful, is because they've just been better at this kind of thing.
Well, because they never ever accept the premise that they could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, it's more complicated than that.
I'm just saying.
It's also adding the fair and balanced side everything has an argument. Like you give breath to every counterpoint, which is insidious and interesting. So.
And if you can't back it up, people are sane.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Again, it's the black hole thing.
Which is everything that's wrong with our current system of journalism.
This movie makes you feel so conflicted. Like, ooh, I'm feeling sympathy for Megyn Kelly. Oh, that's weird. But yeah, she's a woman. I get that. Oh, Fox. Oh, I get what you're doing. Like, you're just feeling all of these conflicting emotions. I was on a jury in September, and it had very similar, like everybody was a bad guy in this situation. And this movie kind of gives me a very similar feeling. Everybody's a bad guy. I'm not sure who I should cheer on, etc.
That's why this is so effective. And it's spins this little web that everybody gets caught into more or less. And it's well done. So anyway, one day after a round of work drinks, Kayla and Jess sleep together, though Kayla tells Jess she's not a lesbian. But she is shocked to find Hillary Clinton posters in Jess's apartment. And doesn't quite understand because, you know, actually Kayla is the Luke Skywalker of this group. Sort of a true believer who doesn't quite understand why not everybody is just on the up and up.
All right.
So Jess explains that she, as a lesbian and a Hillary Clinton supporter, she doesn't want to work at Fox, but Fox was the first job she got. And now, even though she's applied for other jobs, she can't get any other job because she works at Fox.
She's damaged goods.
Yeah.
I love this scene. It's one of my favorites in the movie. Because I like Kate McKinnon a lot, but I just love the subtle way that they, you know, the pillow talk. And as the Kayla character says, I can never tell if you're kidding. Right. And that's what makes that movie so great. Cause I can't either.
Yes. And has Kate McKinnon been bad in anything?
Nope.
And I'm not sure that's possible.
Yeah. She needs to be careful about how much she does. I don't want her to disappoint me again. It's all about me.
Have you guys seen Ghostbusters?
Oh, I have not.
That movie is, it's not as good as I wanted it to be, but she is hilarious in that movie. She's always doing something just so weird in the background, even when she has no speaking parts in that scene. She's so funny in that movie.
I thought you were going to rain on my parade. I'm so happy you didn't. Still on the McKinnon train.
I mean, she was great in Yesterday.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as the devil.
Yes.
So, at work, Kayla tells Jess to hide a photo she has with another woman. Kayla is invited to Roger's office to meet with him. And, she's not invited
to. She invites herself.
Yes, she completely invites herself.
Yeah, she completely engineers the whole process.
Yes.
I think earlier, Eric, you also said she gets a promotion. And I think that's also very misleading. She doesn't get a promotion. She seeks out a promotion.
Oh, most definitely.
She uses her sexuality and her looks to get her where she wants to go. And I mean, and her views, of course. And I'm not disparaging the fact that she doesn't seem quite smart, but that's such another part of the movie.
Oh yeah. 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 Oh no. She knows what she's doing in one sense. She's just way, she's way out of her depth, as it turns out.
That's, yeah, exactly.
Of all of the terrible people in this movie, the one that my wife was the most angry with,
I know,
was,
I know,
Roger Ailes' secretary.
Secretary. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, the Kayla character isn't fooling anyone. She thinks she's fooling people, but she's not. The secretary has done this before. We'll do this again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rotten, straight to the core. Let's see. Yeah, so she's excited to meet Roger. She's engineered this meeting so she can impress him. And then he does his Roger Ailes thing, which is be a lech. And tells her to do a twirl for him. And then it gets more and more uncomfortable. And from the trivia, there's not a whole lot of trivia in this because, you know, it's all pretty much out there. But apparently they shot this one scene with multiple cameras because they did not want to do many takes of this particular scene. Because it's supposed to be uncomfortable. It was very uncomfortable. So there was no need to inflict that upon anybody. Of the actors, I mean. Yeah, so she's sort of traumatized by this. And then she goes to her friend Jess. And Jess is like, oh, I can't be involved in any of this. Sorry.
Yeah, that was a heartbreaking scene.
Yes. And it you know, again, it goes to tell Kayla that, yeah, now she's alone.
Mm-hmm.
Time passes, and Megan goes to interview Donald Trump at Trump Tower. And when she's reviewing the footage, and Douglas is angry that she let him off the hook with barely a slap on the wrist. And that, I think, was a really good scene, too. Where she just wants a little support, and he's like, I thought you asked for my opinion. I pay the bills. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, of course.
What I really liked about that scene was she was really defensive about it at first, you know, denying that she did go easy on him. But by the end, I think after her husband stormed out, she did admit that she'd been having just such a shit year and had been just so downtrodden the whole time. She just wanted it to end. Mm-hmm. And that's what she had to do.
Right. Making a choice.
Mm-hmm. And not a choice that she was happy with or even comfortable with, but
right.
that she There's had to make for her own well-being.
Exactly. That's the humanizing part again, right? Because she says our apartment, right? When she says that it pays for our apartment, then you're like, yeah, she's got bills to pay too, right? We have a tendency to think rich people, they don't have bills, they don't have concerns, they don't have worries. But there's another... You know, it's probably more expensive than all our houses combined, but
yeah.
So.
See, well, and this is another thing that's like, yeah, she just wants this to end. So she will suffer an indignity just to make the stress go away, which is kind of sort of a theme. Because eventually, if Roger prods you enough, you're going to do what he wants you to do. So, meanwhile, Gretchen does a story on her show where she tells the audience that she supports on a ban on assault women's. Assault women's. All right. Okay. So.
That's a pretty brave stance.
Oh, my goodness.
Semi-automatic.
Meanwhile, Gretchen does a story on her show where she tells the audience that she supports a ban on assault weapons and is asked to come to the second floor. Actually, it's the way it's portrayed is great. She asked the rhetorical question, like, hey, I support a ban on assault weapons. I'm going to say it again. You may have a different opinion than I do. And then it flashes on the screen behind her, 89% or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
She is being summoned to the second floor at the same time that Kayla is being summoned. But turns out, she was summoned to the second floor to just be dismissed and witness that Kayla is getting to see Roger and she is not. And not in the first, she's dismissed from Roger's office. And then she is literally dismissed by the people that are firing her, even though, I mean, she's been given a show on a bad time slot, but she has improved the ratings in that time slot by a lot. So there's no real reason to fire her. And she's not given a reason.
Playing right into her hands.
Yes. And to me, Gretchen Carlson started this movie, the Gretchen Carlson character, is portrayed as somebody who is pitiable, but not particularly admirable.
Right, kind of meek and whiny.
Exactly. But as the movie goes along, you realize that, oh yeah, turns out she's just taking a different tack, given her different circumstances. And she's fed up. So Gretchen files suit against Roger, which then sends the Fox offices into high alert. And Roger meets with his wife, Beth, played by Connie Britton. I'm just going to say everybody's name. I'm going to say, and they did amazing, except for one here. So we have Beth, Connie Britton. We have the attorney, Allison Janney. Hey,
you're not going to complain about Richard Kind, are you?
I am.
Allison Janney was amazing.
Oh, she was great. I mean, she was a little over the top.
She was almost like channeling Penny Marshall.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, she actually, I think she was, there was a lot of cheese in the beginning, but like toward the end, where you realize that she's got, you know, she's, ultimately she's a lawyer. She knows her shit. So that worked out well. And yeah, unfortunately, Richard Kind, who I love, don't get me wrong, he's great. He just wasn't a great Rudy Giuliani, just the looks of him. He didn't look vampire enough.
I was trying to figure out who this movie savaged the most. Was it Rudy Giuliani or was it Sean Hannity or Neil Caputo?
They weren't very nice to Geraldo or Greta Van Susteren.
Yeah.
Oh, how about
Jeanine Pirro?
Judge Jeanine, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah. Oh, they managed to savage everybody in quick succession here.
Mm-hmm.
In a great way.
Yes.
So Fox then tells all their female talent to come out and support Roger, which many of them do happily, saying that they were never harassed. And Megan is silent. And she tells her staff the truth because Roger did harass her when she began at the network. Now, her second in command is Gil, Rob Delaney, from both Hobbs and Shaw and Deadpool 2, who wants to know what she wants to do.
Don't sleep on Catastrophe with Rob Delaney.
Okay, Catastrophe?
Mm-hmm. It's an Amazon show.
I was going to say, did we see that movie together at the theater?
No.
No, it's a series. No. Okay. Anyway, so she wants to know what to do because she just spent all this time being the news and doesn't want to insert herself into this. But Fox keeps pressuring Megan to make a statement in support of Roger. And the fact that she's not making a statement right away does not make anybody feel particularly comfortable.
It's pretty noticeable.
Yeah. So in the initial aftermath of the suit, no one comes forward. Which is very disappointing to Gretchen, who had really believed other women would speak out. She had not consulted Drew's wife. But investigators do find six women who are horrifically sexually harassed by Roger, but before Fox News, which isn't helpful to Gretchen's suit or the public perception.
But man, that...
I imagine it actually was helpful for public perception.
Eventually, but yeah.
But that was just... gut-wrenching, that where they have each of the pictures of the women,
the montage,
yes,
the montage.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom tells the story when she was in her so before I was born, and they just moved to Anchorage. My dad, you know, came with the military, and she put on her little short skirt and her, you know, little pink suit jacket, and she walked into the Anchorage Times and showed her legs, and that's how she got a job. And I've always thought about that story. She's like, because that's just the way it was. And thinking about, you know, these women, and you see this on Kayla's face in that really awkward scene, is they're so desperate for this thing that they've wanted for so long, and making that choice. Anyway, it's just, as a woman, especially, I get it, right? Because it's this thing that you can do, and it's so demeaning. And there's this person in power who controls your destiny. And what do? Start over? So that's why it's illegal.
Yeah. Well, and let's see, again, middle-aged white guy. I mean, because I can't but compare also, it to anything.
Also, father of a daughter.
Well, no, that's that. Yeah, no, it's not that I'm not sympathetic. It's just that I don't really have any standing, except that it is maybe the ultimate example Although racism is also another area where this happens, where it's just a shitty system and it's wrong. And yet there's just shit you have to do to get yourself into the system to get what you want. And that sucks for everybody.
Yeah.
Well, no, it doesn't suck for everybody. It works out okay for Roger for a while.
I thought the what was most gut-wrenching about that montage of the six women was the last one. How old she was when she was telling her story was 16.
Yes. So, again, Gretchen really believed other women would come out, but they didn't. And Megan has considered coming forward, but she doesn't want to be the only one. And so she begins hunting for other women, despite of the danger of doing so at Fox.
Well, there are also some really great scenes when she's talking with her team, when they're discussing the hotline, like her perspective yes. about the hotline.
Absolutely, yeah.
Was chilling.
Yeah, they set up a sexual harassment hotline, except that part of the hotline is that the company could record all the conversations and listen in and whatever. So
I don't think that they could, that they did.
Well, and Roger Ailes specifically.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, and yeah, he's already been painted as a very paranoid guy.
Well, but to be fair, too, she's seen pretty paranoid at points, too, because every room she walks into, she unplugs all the mics and mm-hmm. she's making sure, which, again.
No, great little touches.
Well, also what you would do.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So the company that I work for, they do an Ask Me Anything. And we do not have, we only have one senior female executive. And so about every 6 to 9 months, I say diversity is a huge problem in technology. What, you know, do you think is doing a good job? And if not, what do you think you should do? And I ask that anonymously. That is not a question that I feel comfortable asking because I am challenging the C staff. And by the way, you know, I say it to my boss all the time. I'm like, you know, we are not doing a good job. And so I identify with that, right? She's not paranoid. That's reality.
Oh, no, absolutely when not.
You
do, yeah.
Right? You're challenging the establishment. Somebody is going to try and track you down.
Oh, I didn't say she was wrong. I was just saying, you know, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you're wrong.
But I totally get that.
Yeah.
There are certain conversations that I will only have on the phone, right? Or on Zoom, I guess, when I know that they're not recording.
Yeah, in my office, you do actually have to take some conversations in a different room because you don't want to be recorded because everything I do otherwise is recorded.
Yeah. Her sleuthing and trying to discover other victims is interesting and mortifying. Because it's clear that in the beginning, the people that she's talking to don't realize what she's doing. And then quickly they realize what she's doing and they clam up. Oh, I don't really remember. I have a bad memory.
It's unclear what she's doing to the people she's talking to because she could be working for either side.
Yeah.
I mean, It would be easy for her to be Roger's mole, just trying to get chummy with the lady folks. And it doesn't seem like she was particularly chummy to begin with, right?
But in general, I mean, people love to gossip. But when somebody says, oh, okay, interesting. Who was that? That's when it gets real.
Yeah, exactly.
What was her name?
Falafel.
yeah. So, Drew, do you still not know the falafel reference?
No.
Okay, we're getting to it. So eventually she follows a few leads and find multiple women who've been harassed or assaulted by Roger, but also Bill O'Reilly and other men at the network, and then convinces them to go to the investigators. And she meets with Kayla and she asks if Roger harassed her. Kayla admits he did, and Megan tells her it happened to her. Now, Kayla is, at this point, I thought was a very interesting turn because Kayla is angry at Megan. Like, if you had reported this 15 years ago, this maybe wouldn't have happened to me this year. And Megan's like, hey, it's not my job to protect you. You know what you're getting into. So, again, it's a complicated subject. Many layers. But the part of what breaks this whole thing open is, of course, the Bill O'Reilly thing.
Yeah.
And the Bill O'Reilly thing, includes phone conversations where he calls up, what was it, an intern or a colleague or somebody, and talks about taking a shower with her. And he unfortunately forgets the word is loofah, and so he wants to scrub her body with a falafel.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yes, yes. It is hilarious. And I think it is available online. You can get actually listen to a recording of that conversation.
Ugh, yeah. Gross.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
And if it's funny, if I remember correctly, and Jason, you probably could tell me, be the fact checker on this one, but this was right in prime Bill O'Reilly versus Keith Olbermann.
Yes.
So I got to hear the loofah falafel conversation lots of times nightly because Keith Olbermann could not resist talking about it. Because one thing about Bill O'Reilly is he's an incredible bully. He's like 6'4 or something and a huge bully that will physically bully people. But Keith Olbermann is also a very imposing guy who is fairly fearless and so would be more than happy for Bill O'Reilly to take a swing at him. So it was some riveting TV for a couple months. And eventually, Keith Olbermann went crazy.
Well, I was going to say, he was a little nutty, but also, Keith Olbermann he didn't give a fuck about anything. He's like, fire me again, I don't care.
Oh, yeah.
He was fearless. He still is fearless, by the way. If you catch up with him, I think there's that one podcast I mentioned a couple years ago.
Have you guys listened to that podcast where was it a guy basically interviewed Keith Olbermann? Or it was like texts or something between them at first, and then
he actually was a reporter.
He was like Twitter comments back and forth, right?
I think, and then he was British and came to America to interview him, and it was kind of crazy.
It was cringy. Like I will never forget that he dated Katie Turr.
Yeah,
because he keeps talking about Katie Turr as his girlfriend, and I mean they are long broken up, but. Now, whenever I see her on MSNBC or wherever she's working these days, it's always like, oh, yeah, I should know her from being a journalist, not for dating Keith Olbermann, but he wouldn't let me.
Never heard of that guy until this very moment.
Which guy? Keith Olbermann?
Yeah.
Oh, he's amazing.
We all have a part of this story because I think Drew maybe, I don't know if he introduced me to Keith Olbermann. But Drew was probably a fan of SportsCenter with Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick.
That's right. And I was a huge Countdown fan.
Yeah. Well, and I listened to the book, The Big Show, the audiobook where Keith Olbermann and Dan Patrick actually took turns narrating chapters of their own book about their show.
Oh.
They changed the way sports was announced, like local TV people, like Channel 2 News changed the way they called, like they did their sports presentation because of the way Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann did their sports presentations.
Oh, this Bill O'Reilly quote is vile.
Oh, it's not great.
Oh, no, it's foul.
He was fired for a reason. Yeah. Or he retired quickly for a reason.
The falafel one?
Yes. Yes. The quote is, so anyway, this is apparently what he said to Macris on the phone to her. So anyway, I'd be rubbing your big boobs and getting your nipples really hard, kind of kissing your neck from behind. And then I would take the other hand with the falafel thing and I'd put it in. And then I'm not going to read the rest of that sentence. Oh, and it goes, by the way, it goes on for another sentence and a half. So you can fill in the blank. You can have the Mad Libs finish that one out for you.
Miss a Chickpea.
I was looking behind falafel. That looks gross. Anyway.
So disgusting.
Ugh. I'm feeling a lot better about my background.
Yeah. Anyway, so no, Keith Olbermann, by the way, so Keith Olbermann had the show on MSNBC called Countdown, and he apparently, again, because of his big personality, and he got a lot of ratings. I mean, he introduced America to Rachel Maddow, and he will never forget her, never forgive her for not standing up and quitting the same time he did, because she is smarter than that, as it turns out. But he he got progressively antagonistic against MSNBC because he had a contract and they had to pay him either way. And as long as they would keep him on the air, like it went so far as I think his father died toward the end of the run.
His father died.
Like on Fridays, he would take like 10 minutes of airtime, prime time airtime, and read like James Thurber poems.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, he didn't have long for that world. But again, this is all the same time as Bill O'Reilly getting fired for sexual harassment. So it was fascinating.
Yeah, Keith Olbermann left in 2011.
Oh, okay, so it's before
right before, O'Reilly. And then he had that stint on that weird TV network thing that was fake.
Oh yeah, yeah. But yeah.
I think it was internet only, and that didn't turn out well for anybody. I don't think.
Keith Olbermann, interesting character, not a part of this particular story.
No. Falafel.
Yeah. Although, again, if they did the MSNBC story, Keith Olbermann would be part of it because God knows behind the scenes of that would be very interesting.
I would watch that movie.
Do you remember the movie about Late Night?
The Jay Leno, David Letterman?
Helen
Kushnick.
That story is a great story. You know, just things like Jay Leno hiding in a closet or whatever, listening to a conversation.
Night Shift?
Late Shift, maybe? Something like that.
By the way, my wife thought that scene between Kayla and Megyn Kelly was maybe one of the most important scenes in the movie because it says so much about the different perspectives. You know, the Kayla character was sort of rightfully hurt and justified that no one ever stood up before, which left women like her in a vulnerable position. But at the same time, Megyn Kelly was also fueled, I'm guessing, primarily by guilt, very defensive about it and pretty brutal about saying it's not my job to protect you. But my wife said she understood both sides very strongly, and she thought that was a very well crafted and put together scene.
Yeah, it's really kind of the Kobayashi Maru. There is no winning.
Yeah, her point was like when you look at power dynamics, it's a spectrum. So if you're on the very low end of the spectrum, anyone above you looks like they have a ton of power. But if you're just in the middle, you may have, you know, a little bit more authority, but you still don't have the ultimate power, and there's plenty of power above you. So the people at the low end expect, you know, the people in the middle to be the boat rockers for them, but the people in the middle are still really vulnerable to the people who have the ultimate power. So they still feel like they don't have the weight to throw around to be the squeaky wheel yet.
Yeah, I would agree with your wife. I think that I see both of their perspectives, right? Both of their perspectives. And it's so, the whole thing just makes me cringe because that's not happening to men, right? And there's a couple of really good scenes where they show the guys just sitting around. And I think a couple of times they have their, you know, legs super spread out, like, you know, that whole, there's a couple of scenes with the men in the movie and, you know, the male anchors. And that's what's just so awful about it is that that happens to you. And that's why I want so many people to watch this movie and especially men to see it, because I think it really captures so many of the nuances of the essence of what this is all about. And having worked in a male dominated environment where most certainly those types of things are not happening. I mean, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had to shut down because people are just inappropriate at work, period, end of story. And look, there's stories about huge sales conferences where, you know, there's a couple of sales guys, you know, naked in the hallway when everyone wakes up, right? Cause they drink too much. Like there's always, you know, crazy stories, but still as a woman, you know, I just constantly feel like I'm struggling more. So, okay. So here's my tangent. You ready? I'm ready. Sure. You ready for a real tangent? Yep.
I'm ready.
So I bought a new car and I love my new car, but I've not sold my other car. And because I bought my new car like March 15th, which was just about the time that you didn't want anyone to come to your house.
Is this your minivan that you're trying to sell?
Yeah. Yeah. So it sat forever. And a friend of mine said that her son had done a really good job detailing his mom's car. We were just talking about that. And this is not a woman who throws around praise for her 17-year-old son lightly. So I was like, well, he must have done a really good job, because if she gave him praise for it, it had to be fantastic. So I asked if he would be willing to do my car. And, you know, we should have talked about money beforehand, but we didn't. And I figured he was not going to overcharge me, because most kids, you know, way ask under. And so usually I will give them more. But I said, all right, they dropped it off. I said, how much do I owe you? And he looked and he said, I was thinking 200. I was taken aback a little bit. Still, it was less than it would have cost me to have it professionally done. But I'm like, what confidence does it take to go for $200, right? I see it in my brother. I see it, you know, who's 31 and, you know, this tall, good looking, you know, ridiculously confident, overconfident guy. And I see it and I'm like, man, where does that come from? Like, I see it all around me in the men that I work with, right? They're like, oh yeah, I can have that. And it's just not the same with other, you know, as a woman. There are women who are like that. There's just not as many of them. So that's my tangent about my $200.
Did he accept his $125?
No, I paid him $200. Oh,
okay. Did you give him some shit about it?
No, I'm not really that kind of person. I'm not a negotiator. I mean, I was shocked.
Did you at least compliment him on the size of his testicles to ask for that amount of money? I mean, it's probably not appropriate, especially during this particular conversation, but still.
Well, his mom was standing right there, but when I
looked, that's where you look at his mom and say, oh, you must be so proud of the balls that this guy hit. do you have to get his pants tailored?
I knew I knew she thought he was asking for too much. Whatever.
Your overriding sense of fairness won out over your wanting to teach him a lesson.
Yeah, well, I mean, what lesson am I gonna learn? He didn't do anything wrong. We didn't talk about it beforehand. Really, that's the lesson that should have been learned, right? Right. We should have talked about it beforehand and say, okay, how much are you going to charge me? And then we should have agreed to it ahead of time. But it was still, you know, I paid $265 to have my car detailed last summer. So I knew how much it cost.
So he is kicking himself for not asking for more.
That's right.
Because you just paid it. It's awesome. So after this conversation that Kayla has with Megan, Kayla is super upset. So Kayla ends up calling Jess crying and asking if Jess gave Megan her name. And Jess says that, well, kinda. I mean, she may have, what was the quote was like something like, I may have worried about you aloud.
Mm-hmm. This is a very nice way of putting it.
And of course, you know, Jess realizes she has not done the heroic thing. And Kayla is very, very upset. And one wonders whether she should go to the investigators. Jess says that perhaps she should.
I was shocked Jess did not invite her over.
Yeah, well.
She was on a date.
Yeah, I just wonder how the rest of that date went. It couldn't have gone well. So Megan finally comes forward, which is a massive nail in Roger's coffin. And when she's being interviewed by the investigators, she sees her name as Witness W. And realizes that she is the number 23 of the women that came forward.
I have a tangent about this.
Yes, please.
So she says, she's like, W, that's the 23rd letter of the alphabet. Now, I know that's the 23rd letter of the alphabet because when I worked at REI, we had to input member numbers and we had to put the first initial of the last name. So we learned to translate that into letters, into numbers, right? So J is the 10th letter of the alphabet and right, et cetera, et cetera.
So your member number started with the number of the alphabet your first name was?
It was just an N. So you would put it, would put in the member number. And then because our cash registers did not have keyboards, right?
Ah, okay.
right? We input 10-digit item codes. I actually learned to 10 key at REI in Anchorage because of inputting SKUs. So anyway, the whole point is I know what every letter of the alphabet is, right? But most, it's my party trick. Why does Megyn Kelly know that W is the 23rd letter of the alphabet? Maybe it's just my random question.
She's a cunning linguist. I don't know.
Well, it's said in the prologue that before she was at Fox News, she interned at REI.
Well, and that's what gave her, I mean, her disgust at working for a communist sports company is what drove her into the clutches of the conservative Fox News.
Consumer cooperative.
Yeah. Get back on the commune, hippie. Susan then tells Roger that Gretchen has recorded all of their meetings and has proof of everything in the lawsuit. And then he asks why she didn't say anything before. And Susan's like, yeah, they wanted you to deny everything, you jackass.
Turns out in real life, she recorded about a year and a half worth of conversations.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, no. This is the turn where Gretchen Carlson comes out looking a lot smarter than she did, less pitiable and a lot smarter than she did in the beginning.
Yes, she was brutal.
Yeah.
I mean, what it must have taken for her to endure knowing that she had to gather this evidence. And knowing that she would be able to.
And being subjected to this bullshit on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. You know, just the fact that, you know, just the fact that they said, hey, you know, you wonder why the desks at Fox News are clear. That's so you could see the legs of the ladies.
That wasn't any surprise. Or that they're none of them are allowed to wear jeans or pants.
Yeah. What was it? What was the quote? Hey, jeans. Fuck you, Neil.
Yeah. It was towards the end of the movie. That's great.
Sorry, pants, not jeans, for sure. So Roger ends up meeting with Rupert Murdoch, Malcolm McDowell, who, again, he seems like it. We already talked about my admiration for Malcolm McDowell, but he seems like a very big personality himself. So anyway, so Rupert Murdoch, who I'm sure is a very big personality also, meets with Roger and basically tells him, yeah, you're gone. And Roger wants to go with him to the newsroom to tell everybody, but Rupert is like, no, you will not be coming back to the newsroom. Thank you. And good day. And he starts to whine about how much money, you know, about how, well, you, this severance you're offering me is what is already in my contract. I'm like, yeah, yeah, exactly. It's what we owe you. Like, well, don't you think I, you know, no, don't care.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? I made a third of your net worth or whatever. So
one of you is eating because of me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're grateful, Roger.
Yes. Now go away and don't let the door hit you.
Yep.
One of the sons says you're lucky I didn't fire you for cause.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. So again, that's a hero turn for a Murdoch kid.
Yeah.
So Megan goes to the Republican National Convention, where, of course, she gets the win of having Roger fired, but the loss of having Trump as the candidate. So it's, you know, it's a mixed bag for her. And Kayla is happy Roger's gone and takes Jess's photo out of her drawer and encourages her to keep it out. But then she has to hide it when Murdoch comes into the newsroom, which is funny. Well, funny, but
you know. Well, she doesn't hide it because he came into the newsroom. She puts it back because she's so disappointed by what she's hearing from Murdoch that she understands it's just going to be business as usual.
And by the way, this is the only part of the movie I thought was a little over the top, was that Kayla realizes what she's done with Fox News and walks out and tosses her badge in the trash. Like, she might as well doing the fist pump kind of thing at the end. Which is a little fairy tale, but oh well. But then you have the fun ending of Gretchen gets a settlement offer for $20 million and an apology. And they said, oh yeah, by the way, the settlement includes a non-disclosure agreement. So, you know, you can never tell your story. And then so Nicole Kidman gets to look as Gretchen Carlson in the camera and says, maybe. It's like, dun, dun, dun.
The end of the movie very clearly defines, though, that the money settlement that they pay out to settle harassment lawsuits is still less than the severance that they pay to O'Reilly and Ailes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well, again, disgusting. Hey, O'Reilly's going to be coming back soon. He's just a moment away, right? He and Kevin Spacey and Bill Cosby will just go on the victory tour. They'll have OJ as a correspondent. So anyway, some of the other actors, Stephen Root, of course, is an attorney. Elena Ubach, or Ubach, plays Judge Jeanine Pirro. She's from Coco, Freeway, Legally Blonde, Meet the Fockers, and a movie called, that I must see, called Helen Keller versus Night Wolves.
That's amazing.
She also was Mama Coco in the Coco movie. Bill O'Reilly was played by Kevin Dorff.
The one who hated music?
Something. Bill O'Reilly is played by Kevin Dorff. Turns out no relation to anyone.
I don't believe you.
By Michael, I couldn't find it. Bill O'Reilly is played by, Brett Baer was played by Michael Bowie. Chris Wallace was played by Mark Evan Jackson from Kong Skull Island. Greta Van Susteren was played by Anne Ramsey from Planet of the Apes 2001. And she was, of course, Helen Hunt's sister on Mad About You. And whatever technique they used to turn Charlize Theron into Megyn Kelly, they used it to turn Anne Ramsey into Greta Van Susteren. And they also probably used that turn to turn Greta Van Susteren into Greta Van Susteren.
Wasn't Richard Kind also on Mad About You?
Yes, yeah. Ainsley Earhart was played by Alice Eve. Martha McCallum was played by Elizabeth Rome from Law and Order.
Alice Eve from Star Trek?
Neil Cavuto is played by P.J. Byrne from Wolf of Wall Street. Sean Hannity is played by Spencer Garrett from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Geraldo Rivera is played by Tony Plana from Three Amigos and Ugly Betty. And then there were also people I recognized were Madeline Zima, who is the youngest daughter in The Nanny. She's been in a lot of stuff recently, though.
Ham that rocks the cradle.
I think she was in, like, Weeds and... She's been in some other, like, prestige TV lately. Lennon Parnham from comedy. And then one of the sound guys in the Fox crew was John Gabris, who is a podcaster, a comedian. He's very funny. He and Lauren Lapkus, of the previously mentioned Newcomers podcast, they have a podcast called Raised by TV, where they talk about growing up watching TV shows and whatnot. It's pretty entertaining. And Lauren Lapkus, of course, is a big improviser. She and Jason's favorite, Paul F. Tompkins, and Scott Aukerman have a show called Threedom, where they're just three friends who chit-chat, and then they play improv games at the end.
That sounds terrible.
It's pretty entertaining, actually.
Holland Taylor played the secretary.
Yeah.
Holland Taylor from?
She's from tons of stuff, but she's Sarah Paulson's girlfriend, too.
Oh yeah. Oh, so she was on with, what, Two and a Half Men?
Sounds right.
Charlie's Mom from Two and a Half Men.
I've never seen it. I don't know.
Surprisingly good.
I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, well, sorry. Just gonna tell you, it's surprisingly well written and performed.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it. I just got too much other stuff to watch. Yeah.
Oh no, don't go seek it out. No. I mean, even though I know you're a John Cryer fan, but still, it's not worth being a completionist for that part of it. but it proves that Charlie Sheen is a fucking good actor. He just, you wouldn't ever want to be around him.
No, he probably smells bad.
Oh, I'm sure he does, yes. But you know what? Replacing him with Ashton Kutcher is not an improvement, as it turns out. And arguably, he smells bad too, so who knows? So, probably of different things, though. Anybody else have notes?
I thought that it's an interesting mix of real and fake footage that they kind of merged. So I liked that detail. It really played up how paranoid Roger Ailes was. But when they cleaned out his office, he had three guns in his desk. So it was actually pretty paranoid. But they kept having different quotes about what Roger would say to people, like, to get ahead, you have to give a little head. To play with the boys, you have to lay with the boys, stuff like that. This is cringy, but I don't doubt that he said it. So
I bet you that was not even, it wasn't even original to him.
No, I don't doubt it.
I'm sure that was just the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you like your Don Draper now?
Wow.
I've never seen the show. John Hamm is awesome. So
John Hamm is awesome.
Yeah.
That's what the money's for.
So I don't get it, but I'm sure it's hilarious.
One of his subordinates won the thank you.
Ah.
I did like how it was slightly stylized in that the characters would occasionally talk to the camera. Not so much like not as often as in The Big Short, which I found to be kind of distracting after a while. But just enough to add a little bit of style and flavor to this movie, so I did appreciate that. Again, my wife pointed out that it was very similar to Fleabag.
Okay.
Another great show.
What were Jennifer's thoughts?
She really liked this movie. She didn't know the story. She was not familiar with Machen Kelly. Yeah, she knew of Roger Ailes and that he had been fired at one point. She knew Bill Riley had been fired. Sorry, Bill O'Reilly. But she didn't know any of the details of the stories, and she thought it was good. She thought all the performances were really good. She had lots of thoughts about the office politics, both sexual and otherwise. I think she has recently extricated herself from a hostile workplace environment. So that brought up lots of parallels for her. So, she thought it was a really good portrayal of that type of situation.
Sweet. So, Jerry, any final thoughts? Not final thoughts. You may have thoughts after this that will entertain.
So I'm glad you guys enjoyed the movie. I wasn't exactly sure how it was going to go over. You know, there's a lot of layers to this movie. So there's a lot of things going on and a lot of unpacking to do. And cringy in a, oh my God, I can't believe this is actually real. But I thought the acting was spectacular. I was really actually surprised that it didn't do better with Academy Award nominations, because I thought Charlize Theron was fantastic. Like, I thought she was so good in this movie.
I think they got jammed up. I think, three of them were probably nominated in different categories, and they ended up competing against each other, if I remember correctly, right?
I don't remember anybody getting nominated.
You don't think so?
There was only...
But that's not all that surprising, considering Hollywood isn't notoriously good about calling themselves out on things like sexism and sexual harassment, so it probably hit a little close to home where they didn't want to publicize too much.
So won one Oscar... So, for makeup and hairstyling.
Yeah, well, fucking well earned.
And it was, so she was nominated for best performance by an actress in a leading role. And then Margot Robbie was best supporting.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we haven't even talked really about Margot Robbie, who's currently one of the biggest stars out there. But there are so many good performances in this movie that she kind of got swallowed up.
And I thought she was also fantastic.
She was. Yeah, she was. She's good. Amazing. She wants me to. This performance makes me want to watch that Harley Quinn movie.
Harley Quinn movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Birds of Prey or whatever.
Oh, I have no idea.
The Emancipation of Harley Quinn.
Yeah, she played the, Suicide Squad? She played Harley Quinn?
Mm-hmm.
Joker's ex-girlfriend. It's a comic book movie. It's for children. We shouldn't be watching it.
I don't think that one's for children.
She's been in a ton. I mean, I haven't seen I, Tonya. She's been in a ton she picks a wide variety of roles, or they pick her. Like, have you seen the movie Terminal? It is a weird, almost like a David Lynch kind of movie.
Oh.
Well, I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's interesting.
Well, it does not sound good when you describe it that way.
Well, on a David Lynch film, everybody brings their own baggage, so.
Here's a more obscure movie that she was in that was really good. Z for Zachariah. Based on one of my favorite childhood books.
I was going to say.
And the movie is nothing like the book, but it was still good.
Of course not. See also World War Z.
Yes.
Yeah, Terminal stars Margot Robbie, Simon Pegg, Mike Myers.
Mike Myers yeah. is still acting?
Oh, yeah.
You, Jerry, you need to watch The Love Guru.
I've seen it.
Of course you have.
And you loved it, right?
No.
Okay, well, good for you.
I have a fine line on absurdist comedy mm-hmm. when it gets to like too absurd. Like, I mean, I enjoy Austin Powers, but it's a little over the top. So The Love Guru is a little too much for me.
Yeah.
I think the best thing I've ever seen Mike Myers in was Baby Driver.
What about Inglourious Basterds?
He was in Inglourious Basterds?
I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
I didn't really like that movie.
It's weird.
weird. I was just waiting for Eric to roll out the Mariska Hargitay joke again. And again, and again, and again.
It's my favorite part of the movie.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
That and his sitar versions of popular songs.
Yeah.
That and all his book titles. I loved his book titles.
Oh, damn it. Now I'm going to have to watch it again.
No, don't. No, don't.
It turns out you don't.
Yeah, don't.
I'm not even recommending it. I'm just saying that.
I just need. You said, is Mariska Hargitay in it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, but he also greets people saying, Mariska Hargitay.
Oh.
And then he eventually gets to say, Mariska Hargitay, Mariska Hargitay. And so,
see, yeah. I know that I didn't like it as a comedy because I've only seen it once. So if I like a comedy, I will watch it multiple times.
No, watch something else.
See, Mike Myers was in Bohemian Rhapsody. He was in,
that movie.
Inglourious Basterds.
So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Well, we love that movie.
I love that movie.
Actually, we love that movie, but we also loved Stanley Son of Theodore.
What?
You'll need to go to our episode called... it's actually our first music episode, but it's all about So I Married an Axe Murderer, except the second half of it is all about music.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
He was in 54.
Are we doing the filmography of Mike Myers?
I'm just looking at it quickly, yeah.
Yeah, that would be a yes.
It doesn't feel quickly.
You know, Jason... Jason, it looks like you're talking into a falafel.
I know.
When you talk into the microphone. Oh, Jason!
Hold on. Do that one more time. Do that one more time, please. Thank you. Oh, and thank you, Drew. You were cradling Megyn Kelly's or Gretchen Carlson's head.
That's not me. My arm is here.
Oh, okay. Well, it looks like your arm was up there.
Yeah.
It's your
microphone.
It's like you're actually resting your elbow on her boob. Brother Jay?
You. Oh.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I just wanted to thank Jerry for the recommendation and for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
She has now stirred up interest because Jerry and my other high school friend, one of my other high school friends, our high school friends, Erica, has now expressed interest in joining. So,
excellent.
And I have Dougie almost committed. So
I see. Although he wanted to do Eraserhead.
Oh, he was kidding.
Well, I hope so, because as I told him on Facebook, if we did Eraserhead, that would make me finally appreciate the speedy pace and the audience accessibility of 2001: A Space Odyssey. Because Eraserhead, if you've seen it, is impenetrable and boring. Anyway, so, Jason.
Yes.
Your verdict?
This is an A movie. This has got great talent. It's got great acting. The story, while horrifically mostly true, was a good story, and the screenplay was certainly good. It had some great parts, it had some cringy parts, but ultimately I didn't really get taken out of the movie very much, which is good. I also, because it was real life and I knew some of the events, I didn't get distracted by trying to figure out the end of it, which I think allowed me to stay inside the universe. I think it's a terrifying testament to what happened. And it just makes me, feel much more sympathy for both of my brothers that are fathers of daughters. So
actually I feel sorry for the daughters that we are fathers of. as it turns out. But yeah. Brother Drew, was it worth it?
Yeah, this is definitely worth it. Yeah, I mean, this movie certainly struck a nerve with me and my wife. But I'm talking about me. Yeah, because I am a father of two daughters, so there were so many things in this movie that made me cringe. But also, I'm someone who works in the same industry as my wife and used to work in the same office with her. So I've seen a lot of bullshit firsthand, you know, just glass ceiling shit. And, you know, I mentioned she just got out of a bad situation at her previous job. No sexual harassment, but definitely hostile politics. This movie captured a lot of those feelings and essences really well. It really, really made it hit home. So, yeah, I think this movie is certainly worth it. The performances are great. It looks good. It actually moves along really quickly. Is it just over 2 hours?
It's not even 2 hours. It's an hour 40.
Okay. Yeah. It really trucks along. I didn't expect that we would both stay awake because we started watching it pretty late at night. But yeah, we stayed up through the whole thing and then chatted a little bit about it afterwards. So yeah, this is a great movie. I'm really surprised how under the radar it flew.
I think the fact that it has so much tension, and it's just enough tension that it just keeps you going. Not enough that it makes you overwrought, but there's this constant backbeat of tension that you never escape. So,
and we didn't even talk about the soundtrack of this movie. They did interesting things with the music and the sound in this movie.
Oh,
it helped it speed along.
The song at the end. Did you watch the end credits all the way to the end?
I watched, of course, not through. I didn't like the song though.
Oh, it's are you kidding? It's a Regina Spektor song. It's a great song.
No, it's fine. It just doesn't.
Whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. No, I refuse to be wrong. Excellent. Yeah. So are we on to housekeeping?
Housekeeping.
Did you and Jerry summarize your feelings?
Yeah, I'm sorry. My summary is easy. I loved it. It was great. Jerry, final thoughts? I already said final thoughts. I don't know what. Anyway, any other thing you want to?
Sure. I love this movie, and I think, Jason, you really nailed it. It had these little moments of tension that kept you going, but it also had these little moments of humor, I think. And so every once in a while, there would just be this thing that would make me laugh out loud, right? So it wasn't so heavy that, you know, by the end you're crying and you just want to die, right? It gave you a way to absorb the material and really take it to heart and think about it without just being so disparaging. And I love that. I think this can be watched and enjoyed by women who watch Fox and women who don't watch Fox, right? And I think that's, you know, I think it probably leans a little liberal, but I think that it gives the opportunity for this message to be a little more widespread. And I think that's really challenging to do. Right.
It was a very humanizing approach to movie making.
Yeah.
It gave everybody a proper amount of respect, I think. Yeah, and the guys in this movie really didn't have a big role except for Roger Ailes as the bad guy. Everybody else, all the other characters, you know, Bill O'Reilly and stuff, were given the appropriate amount of short shrift because it wasn't about them.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, everybody except for Megyn Kelly's husband and her, the guy on her team, every other male in this movie was portrayed either as a villain or a buffoon.
Yes. Yeah, which works.
Accurately? No.
Yeah.
I will offer one more observation from my wife, which I thought was really interesting. I hadn't thought of when I was watching it. But She said the biggest mistake Roger Ailes made was to make enemies of the Murdoch kids, because she, I didn't think about this, but she rightly pointed out that if he had still been on good terms with the Murdoch kids, there never would have been an outside investigation, and they would have just circled the wagons and nothing would have happened with the lawsuit. It just would have been squashed.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. There's the, and I meant to talk about that, that moment in the elevator, and he says to them, to his sons, I hope you know what you're doing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. That really tells you who the driver is in that.
Yeah. And yeah, it tells you that
you're right.
You
know,
Rupert Murdoch didn't exactly come in on a white horse.
No.
You know, as evidenced by Jess having to put her picture away.
Yeah.
The yeah, names are changing, but the atmosphere wasn't necessarily going to change all that much.
Yeah. So yeah, even though Gretchen Carlson took a very brave step in coming forward and initiating the lawsuit, it was the fact that the Murdoch kids did not protect him at that point. It was what enabled it to go forward for real.
Yeah. So yay for young people and nepotism.
God, Rupert Murdoch is currently married to Jerry Hall.
What?
I thought he had like an Asian wife.
He did have an Asian wife.
He married Jerry Hall after the Asian wife?
2016.
Oh, okay then. Huh.
Yeah, Patricia Booker from 56 to 67, Anna Murdoch from 67 to 99, Wendy Deng from 99 to 2013, and Jerry Hall in 2016.
Wow. Who all has Jerry Hall been married to? Again, I'm not suggesting
Mick Jagger.
Well, she wasn't married, just partners.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Because apparently it was dissolved, is what Wikipedia says. But that's the only other listing.
Is that a palimony suit?
Must have been some kind of... I guess they maybe were married in 90, but it says it was voided in 99.
Yeah.
Common law. It was some kind of common law marriage, so I don't know.
Oh, I see.
I
could have
sworn her name had an I in it, but I guess not.
Maybe we're talking about two different ladies.
No? Jerry Hall, the model?
Jerry Faye Hall versus Jerry Geri Hall.
Oh, maybe that's what I was thinking of.
She's a comedian, the Geri.
Yeah, she's the one who appeared on Saturday Night Live a few times.
Ah.
But who also did some modeling, I thought. Jerry Hall.
Maybe. But this Jerry Hall that is born in 56 is who I'm referring to. She's the the model. So at any rate.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, housekeeping?
Well, since we mentioned it last week, I'll just follow up. My COVID results came back negative.
Yay.
Excellent. Yes. Happy to hear that.
I did, as a result, I quarantined myself over Memorial Day weekend. So I was in Anchorage with the dog when the rest of the family was out here in Willow. But as a result of that, I watched a crap ton of movies in like 3 days because I don't have TV in Anchorage because I switched my Hulu account to Willow. So I had nothing but movies to watch. Yeah. Watched a couple good ones, a lot of bad ones.
Yeah. What, anything interesting? I noticed.
You can't watch your Hulu in multiple places?
I cannot because I get TV.
Oh, you get it through.
Yeah, and that's you can only have it in one location.
So you can't use your Hulu on like your laptop or tablet or anything?
I can, but I just can't watch it on TV. Gotcha.
Understand.
I watched Gerald's Game on Netflix.
And?
It was a lot better than I expected it to be.
I love Carlo Gugino, and I like the book, but I just haven't watched the movie.
It's good. I watched Joker.
And?
It was almost exactly what I expected it to be. Joaquin Phoenix is really good in it. But I found the movie to be really unpleasant.
Why was it unpleasant?
It was really dark and somber the entire way through without really any relief. I understood what they were trying to do with the creating this type of origin story for the character of Joker, but he has like legitimate mental illness, so it's really hard to get behind kind of lionizing him as a charismatic supervillain by the end of the movie. It just makes you feel really, really skeevy to be like, yay, Joker. Yay that the system let you down.
Yay for Gary Glitter.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide if I should watch it because I think it's the borderline of the kind of movies that I can handle. And that pushed me to the no line.
Joaquin Phoenix's performance is really, really good. And he lost a bunch of weight for it, so it's a really physical performance in a way that I didn't expect. But yeah, it was not a pleasant time.
Okay.
I watched Public Enemies again, the Michael Mann movie. That was actually a lot better than I expected it, because the first time I watched it, I really wanted it to be like a 30s gangster era version of Heat, which it was not. So I my expectations were not met, but I rewatched it again. And as much as I don't want to like Johnny Depp, he's really good in that movie. So that was a good time.
Actually, I've watched a bunch of movies that, I watched a French Canadian horror movie called The Decline, and it's about,
is that the one about the Doomsday Preppers?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
It's interesting. It's interesting. I thought it was worth watching. I saw The Plagues of Breslau, a Polish horror movie.
You're watching a whole bunch of apocalypse movies during the real life, like pandemic apocalypse.
Well, let's see. I watched the 2009 Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, and my review was that it's not horrible, but it's not charming, and there was no reason for Denzel Washington's character to be to have all that backstory. There was no reason for all that. Like, it took a very simple movie and turned it much more complicated with no good result. So, yeah. I watched a Korean horror movie called 0.0 Megahertz, sort of a Korean ghost story. not great, but, you know, I think it took me out of it because 0.0 Megahertz is silence. I think by definition, but apparently it's the frequency of ghosts. I don't know. Dumb. And then I watched three movies. I watched three found footage horror movies. I watched Hell House LLC.
Did you just go on like a Shutter rabbit hole?
Kinda. And then I watched Hell House LLC 3, Lake of Fire. And okay, found footage movies aren't great. Just, after The Blair Witch, there hasn't really been any that I found it super interesting. But this one did some very interesting things because it kind of looped back on itself. And I gave each movie like 2.5 stars out of 5. But they were fine. I mean, it was interesting. It was low budget, you know, sort of spotty acting. The special effects were kind of bad when they were CG, but, you know, it was fine. Let's see. I watched Kristen Stewart's Seberg, about Jean Seberg, the French actress who got in trouble for supporting the Black Panther Party. It's fine. You know, she's interesting, but she's still kind of dead in the eyes, so that takes away from her appeal, I think. Good performances all around. Historic, whatever. Anyway, that is the sum total of my. So, Jason,
I just had a Keith Olbermann synopsis. After beginning the countdown's worst person in the world segment in 2005, Olbermann repeatedly awarded Bill O'Reilly the dubious honor of worst person in the world. The feud escalated. When there was extensive coverage in the 2004 sexual harassment suit against O'Reilly, by producer Andrea Macris, during which Olbermann asked Countdown viewers to fund the purchase of the lurid audio tapes allegedly held by Macris, which then escalated in a feud between O'Reilly and Olbermann, where O'Reilly wouldn't even allow the mention of Olbermann's name on the air and cut a caller off who mentioned him. Then further compounded by apparently there was a rivalry that escalated at a 2006 Television Critics Association dinner of California, where Olbermann donned an O'Reilly mask and made a Nazi salute.
Not subtle, these guys.
I remember that.
Yeah, Olbermann, like, I like him a lot, but he is crazy.
Oh, I like a little crazy.
Yeah.
I think he pretty much burned the bridges everywhere he had gainful employment, right?
Yes. I think
including ESPN.
Yes. Yeah, he was in the middle of the bridge as he burned both ends.
Maybe twice. So, I think he went back to ESPN.
I think later. You're right. Very briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of his latter times, he was very public about saying they knew what they were getting. I will be getting all of my money from my contract. If they don't want me to work, that's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, he's no dummy. I mean, he's a smart guy. So.
Not bashful. Jerry, any housekeeping?
I don't know what housekeeping is.
Anything that you'd like to share that was unrelated to the
car detail story is perfect example.
Yeah.
Oh, the car detail.
Yeah.
No, the only thing that I would like to share is that I am currently getting 115 miles to the gallon with my car.
Nice.
And I just think that's amazing. So I just want to share that. What
car were you willing to disclose?
Yeah. I bought a Kia Niro, and I have a plug-in hybrid. So I get 26 miles on electric. And then after that, I switched to a hybrid engine where I get about 48 miles to the gallon. And so because I don't live close to anything, I generally drive 30 to 40 miles when I take a trip into town, you know, to buy groceries and stuff. And so that's why I'm getting about that.
Nice. So Niro, like N-I-R-O?
Yes.
Okay, not like N-E-R-O, the no. guy who fiddled while Rome burned?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Not that guy. Not the one with syphilis.
Probably not what you want on your car.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And Niro is a Korean for long ride.
Oh, there you go. Well, let's check that out.
No way. No way. Not a chance. No way.
Yeah. I love my car and it's ridiculous. And I was talking to my friend and I said, oh, and I have cooled seats. And she's like, you have cooled seats? And I was like, it might be a Kia, but it's a really fancy Kia.
air conditioned seats is one of those things that you think like, I don't care. And then you use it and you're like, oh man, they make road trips so much nicer.
Like the only legacy of this guy that I was engaged to at one point in my life, he had a car that had cooled seats. And I was like, one day I'm going to have cooled seats in my car. And that was one of the reasons I liked the Niro so much is that I could get all the kind of luxury stuff, but at a price point I could afford because, you know, I can't buy a Tesla. So I'm like, I love my cooled seats. They're so awesome.
So, Jerry, let me impose this story on you. My father-in-law and my mother-in-law bought a Mercedes L-Series SUV. It's like 10, 15 years old or whatever, but it was very, very impressive at the time. Heated seats. It would call Germany and check in once in a while on the mothership. And it would tell it, say like Achtung, your tires are low, all that stuff. Like now we were getting it on the Kias of the world, but at the time that was just a Mercedes thing.
Oh, Heidi, your tire pressure is too low.
Exactly. Thank you. Very nice. Yeah.
That's nicht gut.
Nicht gut.
Yeah. I don't know how to say this in German. But it set his jeans on fire because there was a malfunction in his heated seats and he was driving down the road. And he's like, this is weird. And then got out of the car and had to actually pat his buttocks to extinguish the flames or the embers in his jeans. And so he and my mother-in-law were appalled. And so they got it towed down to the dealership And we're going to go in there and saying, oh, we need this, all this done. And they're like, hey, let me see if I can do it. I can't do it. But it's like, oh, Heidi, that happens. It'll cost you $1,200 to fix. And they're like, what? Like, this isn't like a recall warranty lemon thing. Like, no, that's about right. How long have you had it? Yeah, that's okay. That happens. So
it happens.
They were unhappy with that answer, but you know.
I'm going to be unhappy if my pants ever catch on fire from sitting in my car. I think that's general consensus of the way you should feel if that happens.
I'm going to suggest that I'm going to be unhappy if my pants catch on fire under any circumstances. Car, boat, walking, I don't care.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.